Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the fourth episode of Locked On Cavaliers, the official Cleveland Cavaliers podcast in the Locked On Sports Network. I'm your host, Chris Manning. I'm also an editor at Fear the Sword, a staff writer at Hardwood Paroxysm. And today I'm joined by the man, I don't know if I've ever called him this before, but I think he is the chief of our Chicago Bureau. It's Carter Rodriguez. Carter, what's up, man?
I'm good. I'm glad I got the nod for the Chicago Bureau over Dan Rowell. I think it's pure volume. I just talk a lot.
Well,
and he's so nice and quiet, and that's why I went.
Well, two things: seniority, you've been here longer, sure. If you're this sort longer, and you're a Bobcat, so like therefore you win. It's just It's how it works. But today,
it's like a functional nepotism that we're working with here.
Shout out to the Ohio Bobcats forever and always. But today, Carter is here to talk with me about the Cavs roster construction. As of right now, the roster is technically not fully formed, although we have a very good idea of what it's going to look like. It's not going to be very functionally different than last year. No Timofey Mozgov, as he signed a huge deal with the Lakers. Matthew Dellavedova is now a Milwaukee Buck. And pretty much everybody else is back. There will be some changes. Dante Jones's salary becomes guaranteed on August 1st. I'd expect him to be cut before then. They're adding Kay Felder. Jordan McRae will be on the team for the full year. J.R. Smith is a free agent. He'll resign. LeBron James is a free agent. He has already told the Cavs he's going to resign, but I think he's not really in a rush. So it's kind of the same Cavs that we saw last year. The biggest change is really Mike Dunleavy in it on the wing. You know, he's a guy LeBron's want to play with for a while, and he's a guy, if his back's good, he's going to shoot threes, play solid defense, and be a useful guy off the bench, I think. But Carter, before we dive into some of the specifics, and this is putting you on the spot here, so I apologize for that, but this team as it is, do you think it's better on paper heading into the season as the team that won the finals?
I think it's as good. I wouldn't say it's better or worse significantly. I know a lot of people are really I know a lot of people are really geeked about Mike Dunleavy. I live in Chicago. I watched him play when he came back from that back injury, and he was not right the second half of this season. He didn't move well in backs on older guys. I mean, he's 35. That's scary. So I don't have a ton of faith in him. Felder will be an interesting piece. Can't really count much on him. But the nice thing that I've kind of tried to remind myself, I don't think it's significantly better or worse, and I'm also not sure it matters too much within the context of the Cavaliers' overall goals. It might be a little, I think it could be a little messier when we get into the regular season at that point guard spot, because there's just guys Dele, for all his flaws, was mostly you knew what you got. And he fit, and he did. He was a good culture player, and good practice player. But so, in terms of the regular season, it could be a little messier. But I think that for the most part, this team is roughly the same team.
Yeah, I think the one thing I would say is I think they're functionally swingier. They have, you know, they had Dunleavy, and they are going to rely on them. Besides from Chris Anderson, who hasn't officially signed yet. They didn't really go out and replace a Mozgov, and they really cut two big guys in Mozgov and Conn and cut ties with them, and only really brought in Anderson as the replacement up front. So I think they're a little bit smaller and deeper on the wing, which I think makes a lot of sense, especially because I'm pretty in on Channing Frye as a backup center. I'm like very, very in on Channing Frye as a backup center.
Me too, and I think that demographic, or statistically, if you look at Frye's most successful years, it's featured him playing primarily center because he doesn't really have the foot speed to track power forwards, and he's so devastating when you can stretch people out to that extent. So I like Fry at the five, and I wonder if maybe, because I mean, I don't know about you, I'm not really counting on Birdman for anything at this point in his career. He's 38. That's an NBA retirement home age. And but I think that there's a chance that Griffin saw how effective Richard Jefferson was playing the four in the finals in those small ball lineups. And, you know, the four is always functionally, you know, whoever, you know, playing with LeBron. So, but he was effective in those small ball lineups, rebounded well, was his athleticism still holds up pretty well at that spot. And I wonder if that's kind of the plan, to basically migrate what Mozgov's minutes were for the regular season last year over to RJ at the four for, you know, 15 minutes a game or so.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing will be is kind of how they replaced Olave Adoba, because he was their backup point guard, and I'm saying that in air quotes, because he doesn't really function as a point guard. But there are minutes to fill there where he was playing the one, like lining up and guarding ones when LeBron was really handling the ball. We'll have to fill those minutes somehow. It seems like Mo Williams is the guy that will do that. I have mixed feelings about that because of I'm not sure his knees are good. He's not a good defender. He's kind of a gunner at this point and at his age. So I'm not really in love with that, but I don't know if Felder's really ready. Maybe they try McRae there. I don't know.
I don't think McRae is the answer. I'm not a big McRae fan.
He's fine.
He's just a player. He's an end-of-bench player that's like, I just don't think you can really ever count on him for too much in an actual game based on his play style. And Felder, I know that it's fun to be excited, and trust me, like, I'm going to be over the top excited and say, and send my brother 100 text messages saying, well, he can do this. But, like, for the most part, Kay Felder is going to be found money if he's good. Yeah. It's not going to be something you really want to count on. And
he's going to be in Canton. Like, I would be surprised if he doesn't play a ton of time in Canton, doesn't spend most of the year there, and only really he goes on road trips or something with the Cavs. I mean, I don't even think it's good for him to be with the NBA team for the full year, to be honest with you. Like, I don't really see the point. I'd rather
see. I actually kind of disagree with that.
I'm saying, like, half the time he should be there, but I also just think you look at what he is, and you look at what he needs to do. He needs to play. Like, I'd rather him play.
See, I kind of disagree. I kind of just want him around NBA players as much as possible, because I think that this is a guy who played in a smaller market, or, you know, smaller school, sorry. And just being around these guys, I think, is going to be invaluable for him. If you can stash him in Canton to help develop his skill set, because I'm a little worried about his ability to shoot the ball.
I am too, but basically
the point is he should not be a major figure in the rotation unless he's obscenely better than he should be, which, you know, cool if that happens. Cool for the Cavs. That's awesome. But I wouldn't count on it. So they do have that minutes all. And I honestly think if he's playing early, it's a reflection that Mo Williams has further regressed.
Yeah.
And that's not good. That doesn't function as good news.
No, it doesn't. I think the other thing is you look at Felder and you say you want to have him be in Cleveland. Ken's 40 minutes away from Cleveland. So he can do what Joe Harris did. He can spend time with both, practice with the team, be around LeBron, be around Kyrie, be around Mo, be around James Jones, and learn from those guys, and then go play, and then go do some things. And from what I've been talking, when I talked to Kurt Record of Upside of Motor, and from just some of my own conversations with people, the Cavs do a pretty decent job of kind of tabbing things in Canton and kind of using that to their advantage. Not the way I think you'll see with teams in 5 or 6 years in terms of it being a full farm system, but I think they do a better job than other teams do, in the sense that I think they do actually pay attention and they evaluate guys. I mean, Quinn Cook, for example, is a guy that I really like coming out of college as like a maybe long-term backup point guard option, a Dele replacement. And they just, he played in Canton for a full year and they just were like, okay, you know, we're not going to touch this guy at this point. They just kind of let him go. But McRae was a guy that they had playing Canton a little bit. They found him in the D League. And I think the Cavs at least are aware of that in a sense. But I think the thing with Dele, him replacing him mostly, is he was kind of, indirectly a linchpin on those all bench lineups where it was four bench guys and LeBron, because he was, if he's out there with Shumpert, he was the guy who made Shumpert's ability to not really shoot kind of work, because he would make teams pay for leaving him up front on the backside of LeBron drives, and he could do a little bit of creation when he needed to. They have to replace that somehow.
But I mean, can't Mo, at least on the offensive end, Mo Williams is a more competent offensive player than Dele, wouldn't you say?
In some senses. I think as a creator and as an actual functional point guard, yeah. But here's my thing, and tell me if you think this is a terrible idea. I almost want to see them try to go Shumpert and just let him just guard ones and hope he can be a little bit better. And this puts more pressure on LeBron, which in the regular season maybe isn't great. But just say, you know what, we're just going to see how this works for 5 minutes a game at a time and work it out. Go Shump, just throw Shump at the one, see what happens. You go Dunleavy at the two. You go RJ and LeBron at 3-4, kind of switching them. And you go Fry at the five. You have three shooters on the floor right there. If Shumpert can get back to where he was, at least like halfway there, he's at least passable. And teams have to account for LeBron. And at the very worst, you have Channing Frye and Mike Dunleavy spotting him off the wing. I can live with that, even if it puts a lot of pressure on LeBron to create, which isn't exactly the most dynamic thing in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, and it's fine. And it would, and I think that will work really well in the postseason. But I do think you'll see Mo in those lineups in place of probably Dunleavy or RJ, probably Dunleavy in that, if they're going to try to recreate that magic. Because I think they really don't want LeBron to be the only primary creator on the floor in a regular season game that they already don't care about.
No, yeah, LeBron, I mean, LeBron's going to be coasting. I think we know that.
Yeah, I think the whole team is going to be a disaster in the regular season in terms of their consistent work ethic. This team didn't try when they hadn't won anything yet. Oh, my God. It's going to be a blast.
Yeah,
Cavs Twitter is going to fall apart at some point in the season as the Cavs like lays their way to like being like three games over 500 through 20 games or something like that.
They're like the fifth seed behind the Celtics, the Hawks, the Pacers, and like some like the Pistons or something. It's just something really dumb. But the only thing I think with that is I actually think there's a scenario where LeBron's like, okay, Kyrie, you were great in the finals. I'm going to coast. I'm going to take a month off. I'm going to watch The Godfather a ton, and I'm going to relax, do some yoga, and you're just gonna carry things. And I think that's a scenario where at least some of the time Kyrie just kind of has to do that stuff because he's going to be the other big creator on this team. He's going to be the guy who in some ways, I mean, he's the successor to LeBron in a lot of senses. Not in terms of being like the pillar of the city, but in terms of being the guy who has to do everything for the Cavs to as much as he can. That's kind of coming for Kyrie, and I think you saw it in the finals a little bit. I think David Zavok, our manager at Fear the Sword, tweeted today, the playoffs kind of reinforced the idea of how important individual shot creation is. Mm-hmm. That is Kyrie's best skill, is his ability to get his own shot. I think for parts of the regular season, and I think there are times where he's going to coast too, especially if you know he gets to party in Rio and win a gold. Post title and post Rio, Kyrie Irving is probably going to be a dude who needs to like detox for a little bit. Like that, sure. That dude's had a great summer, and it's only going to get better. But he's going to, I think, for months at a time, he's going to be the guy kind of doing everything. I think, and that since the Cavs are going to look differently, and I would kind of like this maybe see lineups where Kyrie is with like a group of non Kevin Love and LeBron people. I think that'd be kind of interesting.
Well, you can correct me if I'm wrong in terms of the rotations they ran last year, but I know that Kyrie and Love lineups didn't do that well together without LeBron because huge defensive deficiencies LeBron. Weren't the best non-LeBron lineups featuring Kyrie and then, you know, the bench mob? Like,
I'm going to check that, but it wouldn't surprise me if that was
the case. Like, I mean, like, I still feel like you need a little extra creation because of life, and Dave's going to telepathically yell at me. I do think you need a little bit of secondary creation with Kyrie, just because it does play to his worst habits,
the over-dribbling, the contested threes, the like, repeated mid-range jump shots.
Yeah, that's why it's nice to even have like someone like JR out there, as opposed to a guy who can only shoot and like needs to be wide open to take that shot.
It's just a little ugly. Like, you can't really throw him at. You need to have a little bit of dynamic play out there. But Fry does help quite a bit with that. And I'm really interested to see how these bench units look next year with Fry. And I wonder in the regular season if Lou is going to go with the Love-Fry pairing a little bit more often.
I hope he does. I mean, I think it's something
blow that bench units out of the water.
No, it definitely can. We haven't even talked about Love, which I think is, you know, happened for a lot of reasons, but
it's an indicator.
It's like an indicator, but it's like not in the way that it would have been 3 months ago. I think it's just like at this point we've had two seasons of this. We pretty much know that they're never probably going to just give Love the ball like we thought they would in the elbow and on the block and let him kind of do that thing. I kind of hope that with LeBron coasting, they do incorporate some of that more because I think it's going to make them harder to defend. I think it's going to... But we've been saying this for 2 years now, so I just don't ever expect...
Honestly, like... they just never fully commit to it. So, and then they let... I feel like they kind of let their own confirmation bias... like come through like, oh, we gave it to Kevin at the elbow and it didn't work, so we're not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
Like, sure, you didn't cut or do anything interesting around him while he was at the elbow, but sure.
Yeah, you put him out there with Shumpert and Thompson and like no floor spacing. Like, he needs space.
Yeah, he needs some room to move. Yeah, but also, you know, he is a bit of a difficult player to accommodate for. Like, he's a guy you have to just like go out of your way for a little bit in a way that with the talent level of the guys, it's just like, yeah, they're just not going to do that often.
Yeah. I think there's an argument to be made that you could do some dynamic things with and be like, okay, Kevin, just, like, don't hold the ball for 5 seconds. Like, use his passing ability with Kyrie around, like, kind of running around.
Yeah, no one cuts around that guy.
I know. Like, that. Like, it's so funny that this is a podcast I'm doing with someone in the future as a little teaser, but it's kind of funny that the Cavs won without kind of doing a lot of things that are sort of modern NBA. Like, they don't cut off the ball well. They don't move the ball that well. They play a lot of ISO. And this is another thing David's going to be like, oh, you guys are wrong. Like, but, like, it's true. Like, they don't play this very modern, up-tempo, spacey style. They kind of play this...
Well, they play spacey, but it's...
But it's, like, not, like, the... It's not the most, like... It's spacey, but it's not like it's not spacing in the sense of how when you laud like the Warriors or you laud other teams that get really good spacing. It's not that type of spacing. It's like, oh, J.R. Smith is over here and he can create space because he bombs. And you have Kyrie Irving because Kyrie Irving can hit a three from literally anywhere. It's not like they're creating space because the ball movement creates this chaos and openness for everyone to kind of move around.
Yeah, and I think with the direction of small ball, it's like, you know, like they always say that the game is cyclical and things like that. And so these ball movement offenses were this byproduct of Tom Thibodeau, right? Like,
yeah.
He would load the strong side so hard that when you went to ISO, you just got shredded. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't let you score. I mean, they just had too much help. They threw too many bodies at you. So offenses started adjusting. They started shooting some more threes. They started swinging the ball around a little bit more ball movement offense. But now, so that defense sort of, you know, got figured out a little bit. So what are defenses doing now? They're all switching. Switching is hot right now. The Cavs beat the Warriors by switching, and they don't even have that, like, they helped slow the Warriors by switching, and they're not even that good at it. They don't really even have personnel to switch that well, outside of LeBron and Thompson, but, like, Love and Irving and these, you know, got more traditional players. So if the defensive pendulum is switching towards this switching D, individual shot creators and pounding the rock, for better or worse, is that's going to be back in vogue.
Yeah, I think in a sense it will. I think it kind of depends on the style of your team. Like, the Cavs and the Thunder pre the Durant move to Golden State were these two teams that I as much as you want to see them move the ball a little bit better because it makes it easier on guys and makes like your isolation more effective. You also be kind of not making the smartest decision in my mind of not letting Kyrie cook one on one because he's really good at it, and if you can get him to not over dribble and dribble into some bad mid-range shots like he does sometimes, I think you're fine, and I think that works. You just don't
obviously this all functions on the spectrum.
Yeah.
For anyone who's listening and thinking or saying that you don't need to pass, no, passing's super important, and cutting's super important.
Yeah.
And being a smart basketball player is important. But it's the things that the Spurs kind of like, and I loved that Spurs team that won that title, but they did create this like gospel of basketball because it was so pretty. And that's just the way, that's the way you have to play to win. And any other way doesn't really work that well. And it's just, it's all dependent on your personnel. Yeah. The Spurs didn't have Kyrie Irving or LeBron James. They had guys who were good, smart passers and cutters, and that's what they did.
Yeah, Tony Parker as your point guard makes you function differently than when Kyrie Irving is your point guard. When Manu Ginobili is your off guard, it's different than when J.R. Smith is your off guard.
And the heights can be just as high either way.
Yeah.
And from there, it's just an aesthetics play, which, you know, yeah, like you can't really tell someone. Like if someone prefers watching the Spurs play offense, sure, like I can't tell you you don't. But
yeah,
in terms of the efficacy, the efficiency and the value, there's a lot of paths up the same mountain.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the Cavs. I don't always think the Cavs are the most fun team to watch. I think sometimes they're like kind of frustrating to watch. Because you just watch LeBron kind of take some like bad jumpers. Kyrie Irving is my favorite player in the NBA. Like, he's the guy, just when he goes off, I don't think there's anyone that is quite as fun to watch, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But there are times where he does over-dribble. He'll dribble 12 times, and he'll dribble into a contested mid-range shot where he has to fall away. That's just not really fun to watch. And I think Cavs Twitter, as a general rule, I mean, the last 2 years, the team that I think they get most annoyed with besides the Warriors is the Hawks, because you had this thing where the Hawks
are the right way.
Right. And you had like very smart people like writing at very big publications and for big media companies writing about the Hawks, and because they played this beautiful style of basketball. And I think they did. The Hawks were really fun to watch. It wasn't necessarily, it's at times more fun to watch than the Cavs. And yeah, but the Cavs won. And I think there's no one right way to play. I don't think there's necessarily one right way to build a roster. And the Cavs, if the Cavs
primarily get good players.
Yeah.
That's how you build a good roster.
Yeah. And if you're the Cavs, you get good players to fill out your roster that can actually do something on cheap deals. I mean, I'm having a podcast next week with Jacob Rosen of Waiting for Next Year and some other sites and whatnot.
And everything else in
and
America.
Literally everything else ever about the Cavs cap situation. And, everything considered, the Cavs have a pretty deep roster considering they don't have a lot of money. David Griffin has done a great job in turning Andrews and Varejao's contract into training fry. He did a really good job of basically turning Deion Waiters and some minor other things into J.R. Smith and Amon Shumpert. He got done. He did getting the sign and trade for Deli instead of just not matching his deal allowed them to get Mike Dunleavy and keep the other trade exception and be able in the future, if they decide they need to go out and make another move by using that trade exception or using the trade exceptions that they have and kind of doing some creative things. And they're built in that way. And as much as you or I aren't the biggest fans of McRae, taking a chance on a guy like him who can score, like if he's going to ever do one thing in the NBA, it's going to be that he can score. And you know, his summer league play is sort of odd because he's handling the ball a lot and he's not spotting up like he would if he's playing with LeBron and Kyrie at the two. If you think that guy can work and you get him really cheap, get out of the D League and you're paying him a minimum deal next year or whatever it is, that's fine. Like, I think that kind of works.
Yeah, I think that Griffin's done a great job, but I actually have a question for you that was kind of tumbling around my head this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, you see Larry Sanders rumors, and then, you know, different people in the market. Like, I saw someone, I think Dave mentioned that he would be interested in Alan Anderson for the Cavs. I was just thinking, is this roster just set for the most part? Do you think that, for the most part, the prospective 15 people that we see in front of us here, do you think that's going to be what they run and roll into the season with?
Yeah, I do. I don't see JR is going to be back.
Sure.
Anderson kind of fills your need at center. I don't think you need Larry Sanders and Chris Anderson. I personally might have preferred Sanders for a lot of reasons, but Anderson's a guy LeBron knows. He hasn't been out of the NBA the past couple of years. I mean, there's reasons why I think he makes sense. I would have preferred Sanders because he's younger, has more upside and whatnot, but Anderson's not a bad option to just go in there and be a big dude in the middle for 5 minutes a game when you need him or 10 minutes a game when you need him. He's fine. I just don't. They're not going to go. Like, I'm writing about this right now, but they're not going to go out looking at the backup point guard market. I think that's one thing Cavs Twitter has said they wanted. Well, okay,
it's a dark group.
Oh my God! I mean, Mario Chalmers is there, but he's coming off a Achilles injury.
Cole.
Okay, yeah, you got Norris Cole, like, but he can't shoot. It's not this robust market, and like. I had a guy get mad at me on Twitter a couple weeks ago because I was like, he was like, you could have got Trey Burke with you. I'm like, Trey Burke, I don't know.
He might not be an NBA player.
Like, he might not be an NBA player. And, like, are you sure Mo Williams isn't better than Trey Burke? I would rather have Mo Williams. He can at least shoot threes.
And he's been around. And he's continuity been around. Matters to some extent.
Yeah, and I think, like, if you're the Cavs, you don't want to really shake the boat too much. I mean, you've made sort of the big transformative moves already. So any move you make now just kind of has to be guys you know we're going to kind of fit in what you're doing. You bring back everybody, and I think Channing Frye, I think Dave McMenamin from ESPN has written about this more than anybody. Channing Frye was the guy who brought this team together, and so why would you really mess that up? Why would you go out and get things that are unknown quantities in some ways? I could see, like, if they get a chance to get a guy they really, really like using a trade exception or something and getting that guy, if Dan Gilbert's willing to pay even more money on an already crazy tax bill. But at the same time, like, you don't need to go out and make these big things. Like,
I just think that when we're looking at the rest of the people in free agency, I just think it's safe to assume that the Cavs will be sitting these out.
I mean, I'm here for Deion Waiters on a minimum deal, but
I think he'll get more.
Oh yeah, I mean, and also like the hilarity of Deion Waiters resigning in Cleveland, I think would be too much to handle.
That would be absurd.
That would be amazing.
I don't even know. I think that would be on point with winning the title.
Oh yeah.
For me, in terms of fanhood and joy, it's just the inane ridiculousness of Deion Waiters.
And then the mission becomes you have Waiters going, you know, talking crap about KD all year, and they gotta get one for Deion because you let him go, and you gotta get one for Deion now. And then, to quote I don't know who tweeted this from our account, but reuniting the best backcourt in the NBA in Kyrie and Deion.
I tweeted that out.
I didn't know if it was you or Mort, because that was a very Mort tweet, but I'm pretty proud of you for that one, Carter. That was a great tweet. Yeah. I'm here for Deion. I own a Waiters Island t-shirt.
Like, it's wow.
It's great. It's Gilligan's Island print. It's wonderful. It's great.
That's great.
Yeah.
Very jealous. I think we're getting off topic, but yeah. I think that, for the most part, this is the team we're going to have, and I think it makes a fair amount of sense. You'd like a bit, if I'd had my druthers, I would have, you know, perhaps matched Delly, but I think Dunleavy's fine if you didn't want to spend the money, which, you know, makes sense to not want to. So the point guard situation is a little messy, but at the same time, it's like, it's just so hard to get worked up about any of it when you realize that the rotation shrinks to 7 or 8 guys when it really, really, really matters, and the guys who aren't playing well just won't get to play.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would have, if I was David Griffin, I would have matched Matthew Dellavedova too, just because I like what he brings. But at the same time, you're really asking Mo Williams to just defend decently and dribble and shoot, and he's fine. You're asking Shumpert to do more, which, you know, you hope he can respond to. And I, you know, Mike Dunleavy's a really, really nice get. Like, I, you know, if his back is good, that is a very, very solid veteran rotation player for what he's going to have to do on the Cavs. And they got, and he's also like on a pretty affordable deal for the next 2 years. He's making less than $5 million next year.
Like, yeah, in this cap climate, that's free.
That's free. Yeah, that is super cheap. I mean,
another important thing about that Channing Frye trade that no one really mentioned at the time is that Channing's deal de-escalates.
Yeah, he's making 7.8 next year, and then he makes 7.4 in the last year of the deal in 2017-18.
Yeah, that's incredibly cheap. So that was another. That was when I was pining for that that trade going into last year. It was like he's getting cheaper. It's perfect.
I know.
For a roster that's blowing up in a cap. That's blowing up. Having a guy on a de-escalating contract is insane.
Yeah, and he's just so like we talked about this at the top, but I'm really excited to see him on bench lineups where he's just popping up to the top of the key and just bombing threes. It's going to be beautiful. Yeah. It's going to be so effective. Carter, the last question I had for you is: if there is a weakness on this team, looking at the roster as is, what do you think it is?
I guess it's rim protection still, in terms of, like, the macro, if LeBron doesn't want to try. Like, but, like, locked in LeBron on defense is so different when he's just working and patrolling the paint in those small ball lineups. But, and then just foot speed for the bigs. I would say, unless in the regular season at least, when LeBron's primarily playing three almost every minute, because Fry is not particularly fleet of foot. Love is not fleet of foot. Anderson is not as quick as he used to be. So you could probably, outside of Tristan Thompson, expose this team a little bit defensively in the pick and roll, making them track and cover ground. But for the most part, this team's going to be really, really good. And they're probably going to, and just like, as I said, forewarning, they're going to be really frustrating next year for Cavs fans. They are on a victory tour. They just had the biggest release championship ever, like this emotional pent up. And most of the time when you get that release, you really let down. Yeah. So this team's probably going to be frustrating for a while, but they're still super-duper talented, and their best is better than almost everyone's best outside of that one super-duper team out in Oracle.
And I'm actually very excited to see this team headed by a very petty LeBron James, for lack of a better word, to just go and like play that team. I mean, LeBron is literally... LeBron, in peak LeBron fashion, Instagrammed a picture of himself watching The Godfather the day after that rot. Like, they got KD. After the Warriors got KD. Like, LeBron, I think, knows kind of what is coming, and to bring it back to Dunleavy, I'm sure Dunleavy's a guy he's wanted for a long time. Tried to recruit him last summer. I think if you get that, you gotta be feeling good if you're LeBron, you get that.
I love it. Warriors got LeBron. LeBron's rallying the troops. They got Durant, but you know what? We got Mike Dunleavy Jr. So it's an arms race.
Yeah, I mean, same player.
It'll be fascinating.
It's going to be fascinating, and I think kind of seeing how this Cavs team interacts for a full year and what kind of lines is going to be sort of to really watch.
And a full year of Ty Lue.
Yeah, and a full year of Ty Lue, and I mean, this is another podcast because Ty Lue deserves a lot of praise. But one of the things I think we at least, maybe not in articles, but like in talking amongst one another, kind of got frustrated with this. Ty Lue's rotation sometimes are not consistent, so we'll have to see how that goes. But, Carter, where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Carter_Shade. That's about where you can find me, other than, if you want to find me on Facebook, I probably won't accept it.
Yeah.
Because I don't know you guys. Don't be weird. Private thing.
But Carter, you can find Carter's work at Fear the Sword. He's also a producer at 120 Sports. Does a lot of great work, and I thank him for coming on today. As a note for the listeners, today this podcast is going on Friday. We will not have a podcast Saturday and Sunday. I'm gonna plan out a little bit for next week, do some recording for next week, but nothing new will come out. So just make sure you listen to these podcasts over again and listen a lot so we get more listens on the podcast. But next week, we'll be having a few different things. We'll be talking to Jacob Rawson, as I mentioned. Justin Rowan's coming on to talk about Tristan Thompson. The Twitter user known as Chops is coming on to talk about his interview with Kyrie Irving and also when he talked to Larry Sanders. Ian Levy from Fanside will be on next week. There's a lot of cool stuff next week that I'm excited about. Maybe a mailbag in there, too. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at LockedOnCavs. Check us out on Audio Boom. We're now on iTunes and Stitcher, so you can get your podcasts there. I'm a huge fan of the iTunes app. I know it's kind of basic and it's not trendy or anything, but I think it gets the job done, and it'll end up right there every time we get a new episode, which will be really early morning. It's a great way to hear it started with a Cavs podcast on the way to work. But thank you guys again for listening. We'll talk to you on Monday.